Major funding for the following edition of Soundings comes from the Burroughs Wellcome Company, a research-based pharmaceutical company with corporate headquarters and research laboratories in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Additional support for this edition of Soundings comes from the Eugene Garfield Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities. This is Soundings from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Medicine and Social Ethics, this week on Soundings. You'll hear from Michael Waldholtz of the Wall Street Journal and from Alan Roses of the Duke University Medical Center.
I think what we're watching right now is a revolution taking place in science that is going to absolutely change medicine in the 21st century.
Well, I think we're going to be able to identify people at risk. We're going to be able to identify the time points at which time therapy should be applied. And we're going to develop a new class of agents, drugs, that go specifically at what goes wrong that causes the disease to stop it from occurring.
Michael Waldholtz is a staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal and co-author of the book Genome, published last year by Simon & Schuster. Alan Roses is chief of the Division of Neurology in the Department of Medicine at the Duke University Medical Center, where he also serves as director of the Joseph and Kathleen Bryan Alzheimer's Disease Center. Mike, let me begin with you. What is the Genome Project?
Well, the Genome Project is a formal program by the federal government to map or locate all the genes in the body. There are about 50,000 to 100,000 genes that are located at the nucleus of every cell. Mm-hmm. And they pretty much run the machinery of the body. They run the moment-to-moment functions of life. What genes do is they trigger cells to produce proteins, and these proteins interact and carry out the functions of life. And what the Genome Project is an attempt to do within about 15 to 20 years is map all these genes. In other words, locate where they are. And right now, there's location of maybe 3,000 to 4,000 genes, so it's a big program.
Alan Roses, let me turn to you for a moment. One of the words in the subtitle of Mike Waldholtz's book that he wrote with Jerry Bishop is the word breakthrough. Now, that's the kind of thing that we see in the newspapers, and we think of dramatic events in the medical laboratories. Is that a fair description of what's going on in genetic research these days?
Well, I would think so. The major technical breakthrough of being able to map human genes and to actually map the whole human genome is a technical breakthrough. I see it something like trying to get to the moon. There's a technical skills that have had to be developed. They've been developed, and there's a reasonable way to apply them. Mm. I see the payoffs for something like mapping the whole human genome to shorten the time that it takes to do the things that technical breakthrough allows you to do.
Let me just spend a few minutes with you, Alan Roses and Mike Waldholtz, without becoming too technical. Tell me about the complications, the medical, technical, laboratory kinds of things that physicians do when they hunt for genes. I'm molecular biology, is that a way into this thing, Alan?
Yeah, when we're interested in where a gene is, I think we look at the genome analogous to a road that goes from New York to Los Angeles. The first thing we have to figure out is where is the city that this gene might lie in. And trying to find it is one aspect of it.
So it could be Abilene, Kansas or Santa Fe, New Mexico.
That's
that
right.
It?
Uh-huh. And so the first thing that people hear about is linkage. Huh. And that's a technique where you use patient material and various probes to try to find out where it's located. Once you find out where it is, what state it's in, what cities it's in, what block it's in, what house it's in, what room it's in, you're working down to trying to find out exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And obviously the rationale for that is once you find out what it is, you want to do something therapeutic to treat the people who get this particular disease.
Mike Waldholtz, is it always necessary in highly complex technical instances such as the Genome Project? Do we have to trust the experts? With no disrespect intended here for Alan Roses, he's the expert. This is the guy in the lab with the microscope. You're the reporter. I'm the patient. Do we have to take his word? Are there ways that we can figure out, what he's telling us about all of this is true?
Well, and in fact, one of the reasons we wrote our book, Genome, was an effort to tell lay people what scientists like Dr. Roses is doing, basically behind the scenes. It wasn't as if they were doing this in any secretive way. It was mm-hmm. just that what they were doing was something that in the last 5 to 10 to 15 years began growing on itself so much that I think even most of them are surprised by what's happened. And we wanted to take a step back and say, well, wait a second, let's just see what's going on. Not in any kind of a skeptical or questioning or controversial way, but so much as to tell the public, listen, let's say you were able to know about the Manhattan Project, which was the effort to, of course, split the atom and create an atomic bomb. And in the late 1930s, we could tell you that there were a group of scientists gathering different technical feats to pull that off. What would you do with that information? And we in some way feel that what we've done in this book is analogous to that, which is really to tell you that there is this technology that's taken place. The scientists and the technology are literally on the track. The train is out of the station. And it's going down the road, and we're going to tell you about it.
All right.
If you're asking me what I think, whether it's good or bad,
right.
I'd rather not do that. But I don't think we need to necessarily say whether it's good or bad. I think what we're watching right now is a revolution taking place in science that is going to absolutely change medicine in the 21st century, whether you think it's good or bad, and in fact, will have even broader implications to all of society.
Well, we'll come to some of these implications in just a moment, but let me again turn to Alan Roses. Dr. Roses, how do you and your fellow physicians, the men and women who work on genetic engineering and the Genome Project, how do you talk to one another? Is it all technical talk? Do you discuss, do you worry and fret about ethical and social implications? Or are you technicians, in effect, living off from society?
From the medical point of view, we approach this like we approach seeing a patient that we can do something about now.
It's a puzzle you want to solve.
Right. We have diagnosis, we have treatments, we use them. From the genetic research point of view, we have people with very terrible diseases that we can make diagnoses of, but we can't do anything about. I don't think there's anything ethically wrong in trying to approach their problem and using the best tools available to mm-hmm. come out with real answers so that we can devise real treatments. So the ethical implications of for the rationale for what we're doing is not a real problem for the physicians. What turns to be the ethical things is the steps that you take to get to a particular place. So, for instance, in Huntington's disease, and I think the book also points this out, mm-hmm. you reach a stage where you can make a diagnosis with some degree of accuracy on an individual before they have symptoms for a lethal disease, which is going to kill them with a terrible way of dying in their 20s and 30s.
What about the creation of what has come to be termed a genetic underclass? That is to say, people upon whom physicians, society will draw to fix other components of the society, and we're creating a kind of an Appalachia here, biologically speaking. Mike, what about this?
Well, you know, we write about it as a concern that a lot of people have, because there are some people who are looking down the road when in fact we do have the entire genome identified, that you will be able, through a simple blood test, to be able to look into someone's genome, to be able to identify their genetic profile, and to be mm-hmm. able to see people's genetic strengths as well as weaknesses. And what's happening with this genetic research in the last few years is that scientists are now finding that very common illnesses, not just diseases that we think of rare, such as Alzheimer's and Huntington's, but very common illnesses such as heart disease and cancer and diabetes and arthritis and many other problems.
We're on the way to solving these.
Well, what they're finding is that these diseases have a genetic foundation.
Uh-huh.
In other words, some of us are born particularly susceptible or vulnerable to these because of genetic, the way we are, genetic, our inheritance. That doesn't mean we'll get those illnesses. That means that under certain conditions, we're at risk. But once you have this genetic profile, we'll be able to identify who is at risk and who is. And the people who are looking into the future, the sort of future thinkers are saying, well, what are people going to do with that information? What are employers in the future who are worried about their mounting healthcare bills going to do? Are they going to screen out people who are at risk of heart disease because they don't want to pay their healthcare bills? And then they begin saying, well, then we're going to have a new form of discrimination in which we have a biological, not just a racial, let's say, underclass. And this is our people who are thinking that, in fact, this information, this genetic information we're producing now bit by bit is going to be abused. And they want to start thinking about some way of regulating it.
Alan Roses, are you responsible to provide answers to questions like that as a physician and a researcher? Or is your role, what is your role in looking at questions like that?
Well, we consider the possibilities of the future, but I consider the positive contributions to the future to weigh much greater than the imaginations of
the naysayers.
For me, it's a question, will I trade off a treatment that might wipe out Alzheimer's disease as a really functional epidemic in this country for the possibility that somebody unregulated might do something morally wrong? The technology is not the mistake. It's how people could abuse it. And I think the ethics that we have now need to deal with this as it develops and as the problems present itself, rather than being so imaginative about the problems that you don't see the benefits.
You know, Nancy Wexler, who was involved in finding the Huntington's and locating the Huntington's disease gene, has been one of the people to think about the ethical issues early on and has been named to be part of the Genome Project.
She runs a center for ethics.
She's part of the Genome Project that is looking at the ethical issues here. And she makes a point that I think is very good. That, you know, we've always had bad people. We've always had people who have discriminated against other people. And that genetic information is just going to be another tool that we need to be conscious about. But I agree absolutely with Dr. Roses that right now, where we are right now, and as we stand on the edge of the 1990s, the medical contribution here is so far outweighs the concerns of the future that I think we have to allow the Dr. Roses of the world to go forward and to give them what they need. Because think about the possibility, the work that Dr. Roses is doing in Alzheimer's disease, the possibility of being able to identify people who are at risk of developing Alzheimer's, and then eventually coming up with the first true treatments for that terrible illness. That's what's going to come out of this. And not just for that illness, but we're talking about for almost, you know, for scores of terrible problems that now affect men.
Let me present you with a scenario here, Mike Waldholtz, Alan Roses. I come in to see Dr. Roses and I say, my wife or my daughter is pregnant, and you tell me that the probability is that something terrible is going to happen, Huntington's disease, alcoholism, heart disease. What do you say to me when we talk back and forth about this? Do you offer advice as a physician, a technician, or as an ethical member in this conversation?
All three. We do this all the time for diseases we can approach now. For 20 years in North Carolina, where we sit, I've taken care of kids with Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
And what is that, just very briefly?
It's a X-linked, very severe muscular dystrophy, Jerry Lewis's kids. Hmm. Okay, it affects males, and the sisters, many of the sisters are carriers. When they would come in the early 70s, we couldn't tell them whether their pregnancy was going to result in a boy with this disease or a girl or a boy without the disease. And that was a very bad state of affairs, because many of those women chose not to ever have children. Very quickly, we were able to do sex determinations, and since only boys got the serious disease, they had only girls. Now, we can precisely diagnose whether they are carrying an affected fetus in many cases and allow them to have normal boys and normal girls. And what essentially has come out of this is that it has affected the entire social structures within those types of families where the women are not carrying a scarlet letter and they're able to have normal children. And we have cut down the number of fetuses that have been terminated, if you will, because we can now say who is normal.
You know, but you know, your listeners are saying, well, that's, you know, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which involves a very small subpopulation of the country.
What about X, Y, and Z?
Well, and in fact, it's going to start happening in X, Y, and Z. And the kinds of diseases, again, I come back to the big killers in our society, heart disease and cancer, where we're going to begin identifying a group. It's not a small group. It's several dozen genes that can be affected and make particular people susceptible to disease. We know, for instance, any doctor knows, and people who are in these families know, that, for instance, breast cancer is common in certain families, that certain families just have a higher rate of breast cancer. Scientists are just on the verge of saying that we think we can identify certain genes that are passed along in those families.
Goodness.
And we're not going to, I don't think we're going to, we're at the point where we may want to abort children who carry this predilection or predisposition, but we could perhaps make sure that they're not in an environment as they grow up that puts them at risk. And in fact, for the first time, we'll probably discover what that environment is that triggers the development of breast cancer.
Dr. Roses?
Yeah, in situations like that where you have late onset or adult onset sorts of problems, whether it's breast cancer, Huntington's disease, or even Alzheimer's disease, we're not talking about anything that has to do with engineering down at the fetal level. What we're talking about is how genes work and what affects these genes. Knowing what they are is simply the first step. Knowing where they are is another step, but how they work, how they express the disease is where the control will come in. And I see a time where somebody 50 years of age can come in and get a blood test and say, aha, yeah, it looks like you're maybe susceptible to developing Alzheimer's disease at another 10, 12 years, but if you take this pill, you won't do it until you're 95 years of age.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you both, Alan Roses, Michael Waldholz, in the universe of medical and scientific research that's going on in the United States, how important would you say that genetic engineering is? And what about the ticket paying for all of this?
Well, you know, Dr. Roses might not say it because he's involved in it, but as a reporter covering medicine, I see this as the single most important bit of research it is going to be the major thrust of biomedical research going into the next century. All new drugs coming out of the next century will be based on genetic research. All new drugs will be based on an attempt to fix or alleviate or involve proteins that are produced by certain drugs.
Because we're moving away from symptoms and down to causalities.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. That's exactly it. Right now we treat arthritis, we try to resolve inflammation, we do it basically with aspirin and super versions of aspirin that try to relieve inflammation at the source. Mm-hmm. In the future, we might actually be affecting, regulating the genes that promote inflammation. We'll either be turning it on or turning it off the way the body should have been doing it. In the first place, we'll be helping the body do it.
Well, let me be fanciful or whimsical for a moment with Mike Waldholz. Before our taping session, we were talking with another one of the scholars here at the Humanities Center about science fiction. Is there any concern at all? I mean, this is a serious question. You know, you hear, you read novels and movies about genetic mutations and things like that. Is that all just trash TV, or does it enter at any level into this discussion? Mike?
Well, I've been astounded as I've traveled across the country after writing this book that the kind of reaction we get from people, lay people who are not aware of the science but understand the potential of developing this genome, of being able to look at the genome and develop profiles, individual profiles, the amount of fear that people have. This is a powerful piece of information that we're talking about, and it's very private information.
Yeah.
And right now we're able to keep it private because it's unknown. And I think the fact that this information is going to get widely known, the fact that there are scientists out there who are faceless and we don't know about, who might try to manipulate it, who might take advantage of what technology that exists, the ability to transplant, replace a bad gene with a good gene.
Yeah.
We can already do it in mice. We can already create entire lines of what are called transgenic mice, in which we can actually change their...
Harvard have a patent on a critter that is a genetic... it's a genetic creation.
And if we can do it with mice, what's the difficulty in doing it with humans? And I think this is very frightening to people.
But we
also have to remember that, as you know, we're a society that doesn't do a lot of things that are technologically possible. and we have to remember that we self-regulate each other. And that knowledge, just the information of knowing that this exists, I think is, and it's going to be a very strong break on society doing things that are very abusive.
Well, this word that you just used, Mike Waldholz, regulation, what about the, quickly, tell me, what about the role of the government? And my sense is that it's not the scientists that we need to worry about. It's the people who are going to control the information.
I think we're going to have to see, you know, as a reporter, we see it all the time. People have to, run across streets before they put up stoplights. And we're going to have to start seeing specific kinds of abuses before we can write laws. Anyone who is thinking now in the state legislature of writing a law or in the federal government of writing laws, I think, is way ahead of what's going on. There are particular situations that we document, a few in the book, in which clearly insurance companies, for instance, have asked people for information that they shouldn't be asking for, and people have had their wrists slapped. But I don't think we're seeing widespread or wholesale abuse of this information yet. There are reporters like me who are out there waiting for it to happen, asking the Dr. Roses of the world, when you see it happen, call us, we'll write about it, and see if that can regulate it from the start.
How would you rate the kind of scientific reporting, medical reporting that goes on in this country? I mean, the sense that the public, quote unquote, has of this genome research?
I think the reporting has been very good lately, in the last few years. This research has sort of come up upon us, reporters. Many of us knew very little, and to this day probably know very little about genetic research in general. But I think, it is so apparent. I mean, every week we're seeing reports out of the major scientific journals that every reporter in the medical field has got to pay attention to it. And some of them, major foundations that support genetic research are now offering seminars for reporters, sort of retreats for reporters. We're sharing a lot of information. We're all writing about it. You can almost every other week or every other month, you can see another reporter who's doing a special section in his newspaper or magazine about it. Nonetheless, I think there is this sort of gee whiz quality to the reporting, and also this sort of concern. There was this past summer a report by Barbara Walters on ABC, a special primetime documentary called The Search for the Perfect Baby, which really raised the level of fear about, as you talked about, this biological underclass, and are we too concerned about trying to create perfect babies, babies with high intelligence and babies who can be great football players or musicians, when in fact I don't think that's the issue before us now. Although as reporters we want to be skeptical and we ought to raise our level of skepticism, at the same time I think there is right now a revolution taking place that we need to educate people about, not frighten them, but really educate people about.
Do you think we'll ever come to the day, Dr. Alan Roses, when you can create the perfect reporter and have a means to get your message across to the public?
Well, nothing's perfect, and reporters are far from perfect.
Thank you.
No, I don't think that's a concern. It's a concern that it's my concern that report by on primetime TV missed the whole focus of what's going on and made it into almost a criminal report about
an
something.
Indictment of some sort.
That's right.
Yeah, there was an investigative quality about it, when in fact no one out there was doing anything with any kind of negligence in mind. But in fact, was raising the specter of what could happen way down the line, and that's too far ahead.
Makes good copy, huh?
Well, that's also one of the problems. Sometimes you present to a group of people, and in fact, I had this opportunity in Bar Harbor this summer, and there were some very highly educated medical reporters in the audience. But yet some of the story that got out as a result of that, maybe it's the headline writer.
Mm-hmm. This was your stories about Alzheimer's.
About Alzheimer's disease. Some of the stuff that got out was taking an aspect, a small aspect that would be different for their story, and make it different than just the report. And sometimes the focus on that aspect, again, missed the point of what was being said.
As we say here at the Humanity Center, context is all.
Yeah. Well, and it's a real luxury, especially in journalism. And we have to remember that the journalism is entertainment, and that we're all sort of competing with everyone's attention, mm-hmm. and that if you write about the dog biting the man, no one's going to read it, and so you have to look at the other side of the story, and that's hard for us as journalists. That is a conflict that we always have, and in the medical field, luckily, at least I feel this way as a reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Luckily, there is you couldn't write fiction about the kinds of things that are happening today, and I think if put in the proper context and only and stated properly, there is still enough inherent excitement in what's going on, if stated properly, that an intelligent person will understand that things are important without you telling them that this is a major breakthrough, and that it has implications that are also frightening. But I think other newspaper reporters, a lot of my colleagues who work for other publications, don't have that luxury, and I feel for them.
Let's move toward a conclusion of our conversation, Mike Waldholtz and Alan Roses. Dr. Roses, I'll give you the last word. What do you say to a general audience about the importance of what you do and the difficulty of understanding this enormous complexity, all this genetic research that's going on?
Well, I'd like to go back to the 1930s and 1940s, where physicians took care of people. That's what we're in the business to do. And just because it's more complex and it takes a larger degree perhaps of education and technical expertise to understand, it basically isn't going to be any different. We're people dealing with people. We're trying to solve the kinds of things that affect people in very bad ways. And we're trying to do it with the best tools that are the most specific available. And along with all the fears, there has to be a considerable amount of trust.
Alan Roses is chief of the Division of Neurology in the Department of Medicine at the Duke University Medical Center, where he also serves as the director of the Joseph and Kathleen Bryan Alzheimer's Disease Center. Michael Waldholtz is a staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Michael Waldholtz is co-author of the book Genome, published last year by Simon & Schuster. This is Soundings from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Soundings on Medicine and Genetic Engineering is available on cassette. Send $5 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Ask for program number 556. That's program number 556. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code 27709. Send $2 for a complete summary of Soundings discussions available on cassettes. When you write, please mention the call letters of this radio station. The National Humanities Center is eager to hear your comments about Soundings. Next week, the second segment in a series of discussions entitled What Should Teachers Know? Listen for Edith Schall of Athens Drive High School in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Philip Stewart of the Department of Romance Studies at Duke University. Our topic will be the teaching of foreign languages and literatures in American high schools and universities. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Major funding for this edition of Soundings came from the Burroughs Wellcome Company, a research-based pharmaceutical company with corporate headquarters and research laboratories in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Additional support for this edition of Soundings came from the Eugene Garfield Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Medicine and Society, this week on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me for a conversation with Michael Waldholtz of the Wall Street Journal and Alan Roses, a physician at the Duke University Medical Center. Our topic is genetic engineering, public policy, and medical ethics. Because it's practical, is genetic engineering ethical? Medicine and Society, some answers and insights from the National Humanities Center, this week on Soundings.